Budget Division will come to order. The first item we have on the agenda will be the GMC bill, which we will be using Senate File 460 as the vehicle.
It's just that I didn't. Good morning, Senator Berglund.
I hope so. So, Madam Chair, I'm just going to call to your attention that I have two amendments when we have more members here. It is an A-17 and an A-18 amendment. One has to do with prescription drugs, and the other one has to do with the appropriation section that we can now make correct based on a preliminary fiscal note. I'm going to just go through the bill quickly and make a few comments about it, and then we can take the testimony. The first part of the bill is the mental health reform that was in the first bill, and since we've talked about it previously, I'm not going to go over it again, except to say that I'm glad it's still in the bill. Bill removes from the law the hospital's ability to get the quarterly DSH payments, and you'll see when we get to the fiscal note that that will become part of the funding for the GMC program. Bill also modifies language that established intergovernmental transfers. This is commonly known as IGT3. There are four hospitals that will continue to receive the IGT3 payments: Hennepin, Ramsey, Douglas, and Rice hospitals. Then, beginning April 1st, the General Assistance Medical Care Program for a two-month period will be administered according to the fee-for-service portion of the current GAMC bill,
that's probably not gonna happen,
with a ratable reduction of 37%, except for outpatient drugs, which will not be ratably reduced. There is no change in eligibility in the bill beyond what there was in the last bill. And the bill also will be phasing out the Minnesota Care Transition Program so that those who enter the program beginning on April 1st will continue to transition into Minnesota Care. But after the 2 months, then we would have no more folks coming into the transitional Minnesota Care program. And the reason for that is because the department gave us a fiscal note indicating that they believe that the hospitals that will participate in the GMC, new GMC program, will have larger incentives to be transferring people into Minnesota Care themselves. And first of all, we know the Minnesota Care Fund can't afford to have two mechanisms to be transferring people from GMC into Minnesota Care. And secondly, it seemed that most of the policy reasons for doing the Minnesota Care Transition Program no longer will exist. One of the reasons was to make sure people had a medical home. Under this bill, the hospital organizations that are doing the coordinated care will be providing them with a medical home. And the second was to make sure that they had more continuous coverage. About a fourth of the people that enter the Minnesota Care Transition Program actually stay in Minnesota Care for some period of time. The rest of them fall away. So we believe that the hospital organizations and others in the state will be having as much incentive to get people into Minnesota Care under this new structure. And we don't really need the transition program in order to help people have continuous coverage.
Could
Senator Berglund. So Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there would be no transitional Minnesota Care program for the CCO hospitals or the non-CCO hospitals. It's phased out entirely.
Well, Minnesota Care would continue to exist.
Right. But the transitional
program that automatically moves people, a certain group of people who have been in GMC into Minnesota Care, would be phased out so that it would no longer exist as of June 1st. I mean, there'd be no more new people coming in after June 1st.
Senator Prettner-Solon?
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that people would be more willing to encourage people to get into Minnesota Care because the payments under GMC are so low, and it would be an incentive enough without having that transition program.
That's right. That's what we felt. And honestly, we were not going to have a balanced Minnesota Care Fund if we didn't pick one of these two. And since, obviously, if we want to have GMC, we have to move forward with structure that has been agreed to, it seemed like discontinuing the other program at this time would be appropriate. Beginning on June 1st, then, of 2010, the Commissioner of Human Services would contract with qualifying hospitals or groups of hospitals who decide to deliver the care for GMC enrollees through a coordinated care delivery system. The system must include certain services that are listed in Subdivision 4 of in Subdivision 6, Paragraph A, Subdivision 4, or a set of comprehensive and medically necessary health services that a recipient might reasonably require to be maintained in good health and that has been approved by the commissioner. Beginning June 1st, 2010, these hospitals would contract with DHS to provide a coordinated care delivery system. The payments would be based on the utilization of GMC clients during calendar year 2007 based on fee-for-service GMC payments equal to or greater than $1,500,000 or equal to or greater than 1.3% of net patient revenue. contract with those hospitals would be necessary to prove geographic access or to ensure at least 80% of enrollees have access to this coordinated care delivery system. And those hospitals are North Country Regional Hospital in Bemidji, Fairview Ridges Hospital in Burnsville, Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, St. Mary's Regional Health Center in Detroit Lakes, St. Mary's Medical Center in Duluth, Manoman Health Center in Manoman, Emmanuel St. Joseph's Mayo Health System in Mankato, Hennepin County Medical Center in Minneapolis, University of Minnesota Medical Center in Fairview, Fairview in Minneapolis, Abbott Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis, Mercy Hospital and Healthcare Center in Moose Lake, North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale, St. Mary's Hospital in Rochester, St. Cloud Hospital in St. Cloud, Regents Hospital in St. Paul, United Hospital in St. Paul, and the Rice Memorial Hospital in Wilmer. Participating hospitals would be permitted to receive quarterly payments beginning June 1st, and this would be effective for a 13-month period. GMC applications would be taken as they are today. A person could enroll in any county, or they could enroll through a care provider, as long as that care provider is part of the delivery system. And the delivery system would go beyond these coordinated care hospitals because there is a uncompensated care pool for other hospitals in the state of $20 million for a six-month period of time. Then those other hospitals would be permitted to form contracts with the commissioner to become coordinated care organizations as well. We believe hospitals that have a smaller GMC population or are smaller themselves will need that six-month period to get their business relationships organized to be able to provide coordinated care services. Hospitals are permitted to contract with other providers, including essential community providers. And if a provider contracts with a system, the provider may not refuse services to GMC enrollees. The coordinated care delivery system would be required to provide covered services to enrollees, monitor enrollment, and ensure quality of care, coordinate with the counties, the delivery of services, other homeless prevention support, housing, rent subsidy programs, other things that GMC enrollees might need in order to be successful with their health, that would be provided through the counties. And they are expected to adopt innovative and cost-effective methods of care delivery and coordination. Coordinated care organizations would be able to have a limited provider network, and they would be able to require enrollees to seek services only through the network. This will make sure that they will be serving these clients for at least 6 months in order to be successful with care coordination. GMC enrollees would be able to re-enroll in the program after 6 months if they continue to need care. The hospital organizations that would be the lead agency in these coordinated care organizations would be required to provide the commissioner with information deemed necessary to claim federal Medicaid matching funds through the DISH, and also in order for us to claim recoveries. services list excludes out-of-hospital outpatient prescription drugs. Those would be processed through the Department of Human Services fee-for-service system. However, the coordinating care org, and they would, and that drug benefit would be available to people throughout the state. So hospitals that might be using the uncompensated care pool could send people home with a prescription, and those people would be able to get that prescription filled in their hometown pharmacy. We felt it was very important that people in this program have access, easy access to prescription drugs, because we know that nearly 70% of the population, in addition to other chronic diseases they have, suffer from mental illness. The coordinated care organizations will be required to pay to the department 20% of the cost of the drugs that they provide or they're used by recipients in their network. The allocation for the coordinating care organizations for the 13 months remaining in the biennium is $71 million. It would be allocated to each hospital based on their 2007 payments for GMC services, and the base year would be updated annually. Payments received by Hennepin County Medical Center, Regents Hospital, and Fairview University Medical Center are weighted at 110%. The uncompensated care pool will be paid for through a one-time appropriation transfer to the general fund from the healthcare access fund, and the 2 months of transition during April and May of GMC would be paid for out of a one-time transfer of funds from the healthcare access fund to the general fund. We expect that the prescription drugs will be able to still earn rebate funds. And we know that hospitals that participated in the coordinating care also will have an incentive and are instructed to consult with county veteran service officers and the Veterans Administration to identify services that might be where GMC recipients might be eligible for services through the veterans programs. There are some differences in the way the bill is financed, most notably the reduction to the community services block grant is no longer in the bill. And there were a number of other reductions that were made in the governor's budget that we were asked to look at as a way to make up for that money and any additional money that would be needed in the bill. So when we go through the financing of the program on the fiscal sheet, you will see a number of the governor's recommendations are picked up in the bill. This looks pesky. I think, Madam Chair, this might be a good time to do the amendments now.
Yes, I think that we have a quorum, so we can introduce the amendments.
Start with the A-17 amendment. Well, I guess first of all, I need to move the delete everything amendment.
Senator Bergen moves to delete all amendment. All those, go ahead, Senator Bergen.
Well, you should have a delete everything amendment.
Yeah, the A-16.
A-16. The A-16.
A-16. Can somebody? The latest I have is A-15. So if somebody wants to bring me the A-16 version.
We did something. I don't know. I can't remember.
Then I would be moving as an amendment to the A-16 amendment the A-17 amendment.
You want to, do you want to move both A-16 and A-17 at the same time, Senator Berglund?
Well, I've moved A-16, so it's on the table. Now I'm moving to amend A-16 with A-17. After we get all the amendments attached to A-16, then we could adopt A-16.
All right. Senator Berglund, would you explain the amendments?
Yes. The first amendment, the A-16 amendment, the base amendment, is what I just explained. The A-17 amendment is an amendment to the prescription drug section of the bill. It would add that drugs, the section that has benefits, would make it clear that we're talking about drugs that are administered in an outpatient setting, and that outpatient prescription drugs are covered on a fee-for-service basis in accordance with Subdivision 7 and 8 of the bill. And then in another part of the bill, we would talk about prescription drug coverage is subject to the availability of funds in the pool. And then we have another part of the bill where it indicates that if there would not be any enough funding available at some future time, that the commissioner would bring a suggestion or suggestions to the Legislative Advisory Committee as to how the situation should be dealt with.
Okay, is there any questions? All right, so we can begin by accepting the delete all amendment, the A-16 amendment.
Yes.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the second action then is the amendment, A-17 amendment to the delete all amendment.
And I have an A-18 amendment, and I have an oral addition to the amendment. The A-18 amendment amends the numbers in the appropriations section to reflect.
We have not yet taken action, Senator Berglund, on the A-17 amendment, which is an amendment to A-16. So we need to have.
I thought you just voted on it.
We voted on the delete all amendment, and now we need to add the A-17 amendment, which amends the A-16 amendment.
Okay.
Which you and you're moving that amendment to the delete all amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? It passes, and now to the A-18 amendment.
Corrects the appropriations sections numbers in the bill based on the preliminary fiscal note. And then I'd like to add orally to this amendment, page 9, line 17, delete 5, and insert 4.
Would you explain the amendment, please, Senator Berglund?
I did.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Madam Chair, could you explain a little bit more? I mean, these are some significant sums of money, and I'm not sure what it is we're doing here.
We had plugged in our appropriations section based on our fiscal analyst's estimate of what the numbers would be. We subsequently got preliminary fiscal note from the department, which showed greater recoveries, for example, than we estimated. So that changes a number of and we now have an estimate on the fiscal impact of the Healthcare Access Fund, and so those numbers all change. And
I thought we did.
And this amendment would reflect the correct numbers.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Are there any further questions?
That's a little scary.
And then on the A-18 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Now, do we need an action to accept Senator Berglund, A-16 with the amendments?
We'll do that later.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to just take a little bit of time at this point to go through the fiscal note.
Senator Berglund, there are some questions that people would like to ask on the bill before you go through the fiscal note. Are you ready for those questions now?
Sure.
Okay. You can take some questions. Clarifying the bill without, I think we do not need to debate it right now because there are several people that want to testify on this as well. So clarifying questions are good at this time. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, is being a CCO, I think the term has changed in this bill, but Is that voluntary?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What about, and you mentioned another date, like 6 months off, I think, when other hospitals would be included. Is that voluntary at that point also?
Yes, it is. But at that point, the uncompensated care pool would end. So those hospitals that are not included in the 17 would have to be making business arrangements to become care coordinating organizations, and they could not rely on an uncompensated care pool after the first 6 months.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Prettner-Solin.
Senator Berglund, I understand, but at a 23% reimbursement, the administrative cost of making all those arrangements with your partners far exceeds what it would cost to just treat the patient, I think.
Madam Chair and Berglund. Senator Prettner-Solin, I understand there's not enough money in this proposal. I'm going to say that again. I understand there is not enough money in this proposal, but the patients are not going away. These are very poor, very sick people, and they are going to show up in hospital emergency rooms all over this state if we do not provide some money for an alternative to that scenario. And yes, hospitals can choose not to participate, but the patients in their community are not going to go away. And when they show up in the emergency room with an emergency, they are not going to be able to be turned away.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Senator Berglund, and I know and I agree with you, and I understand that you've done everything you can to make this a solid bill, and we had a good bill. But I still think that it would be to the hospital's advantage not to be a part of this and to just treat the patient, that the reimbursement is so slim.
Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Solin, it would definitely not be in the advantage of the patients. Okay. And I think this bill, first and foremost, has always been about the patients, the clients that need the health care. Under this bill and for hospitals that participate, those patients will have access to outpatient services. They will have access to prescriptions and prescription drugs.
Senator Berglund, I would like to, because of the size of the agenda, I think that if we can debate the bill later and stay with clarifying questions now, that might be helpful to move the process forward. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so with that in mind, I'm not going to follow up with some comments that I agree with what Senator, that I've heard from my hospital, but I would just, the question I have is, a couple of days ago, we talked about trying to get some runs from the department to look at the numbers like we had for the earlier proposals we looked at. And I'm just wondering if we are going to be able to get those runs before we have to vote on the bill.
Senator Berger.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, you should have a sheet at your desk that looks like this. It's an estimate because obviously we don't know if every hospital on the list will participate, and there is language in the bill that if a hospital's caseload is changing dramatically during this 15 months, there can be reallocations of money on a quarterly basis. So this is an estimate that's done by the Hospital Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, I guess what I'm wondering is, and
Senator,
we can pull out our old runs, but earlier we were able to look at the amount the governor, under the governor's cut, his proposal, the amount of our earlier proposals, and now we have this latest kind of fourth proposal in terms of the differences in the dollars.
Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I haven't prepared a comparison like that. You would have to pull out your old information.
Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, if the six-month uncompensated care pool and the 17 hospitals, if you're on this list of 17 hospitals and it is optional to become a CCO, if you choose not to become a CCO, are you able to still use that six-month uncompensated care pool or not?
Well, I believe you would be under the language in the bill.
Okay. Thank you.
It's the only time you can.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, can you, would be helpful, can you give a little bit of detail on how the 17 that appear on this list got on this list?
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Senator Lynch, I did go through that when I presented the bill. You either have to have $1.5 million in GMC business, or it has to be more than 1.3% of your total revenues based on your 2007 fee-for-service utilization.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Senator Olson's question, isn't it true, Madam Chair, that there's a $20 million pool of money for uncompensated care? So any hospital that's not one of those original, is it 17, would submit their bills, and at the end of 6 months, it would be distributed proportionately to all the other hospitals and all the other patients throughout the throughout the state.
Madam Chair, what Senator Prettner-Solon is saying is correct, but I would just like to point out that $20 million over a six-month period for hospitals that serve approximately today 20% of the GAMC population is proportionately a lot more than $71 million for the 80% of the population over a 15-month period.
Any other clarifying?
It is one time. Those hospitals would get it one time.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Any other clarifying questions? Okay, then you would like to continue, Senator Berglund?
Yes, we were going to go through the fiscal information. So we have a summary of resources and expenditures that Mr. Albrecht can go through, and then we have a health care access fund balance that we can look at after that.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members, what I'm going to be going over is the sheet that on the top says Senate File 460 Summary of Resources and Expenditures. Beginning with the resources on line two is the DISH money. The total for the 2010-11 biennium is $53 million.
If I can just interrupt you for a minute.
Senator
here.
Berglund.
Madam Chair, excuse me, Mr. Albrecht. One other thing I didn't mention is because the money that goes out to the coordinating care organizations, we won't really know how much of that is spent on hospital care until we get some kind of a track record. And we would hope that we would be seeing more outpatient care and less inpatient care under this financing mechanism. And so we have language in the bill that Hennepin County will provide to the state of Minnesota their certified public expenditures necessary for us to claim this DISH money so that we won't lose out on the total amount of DISH money we otherwise would be able to claim.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, continuing on line number three, there is $26.7 million in unexpended money from the current GAMC program. Line number four is recoveries from people who are placed into federal programs. That's $2.9 million. The drug rebates on line five are $9 million. The savings from the mental health urgent care provisions are $32,000. The savings from continuing for a short time existing hospital rate reductions are $118,000.
If I can interrupt you again.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, the other notable missing element from this list is the delay of rebasing. That is not being used as a financing mechanism for this bill. It is a one-time savings, and as much as possible, we were trying to find items that would have tail savings as well, because this program in this bill is made permanent.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members, beginning on line 8 are initiatives from the governor's recommended budget reductions. The first one on line 8 is to delay implementation of the Adolescent Act. That's $513,000. Line 9 is elimination of adult mental health specialty care grants. Those are grants that hadn't been started yet. The total is $400,000. Line 10 is some changes to the child support program, one dealing with switching some revenue from a grant program to the general fund. The other is to eliminate payments to hospitals for completing recognition of parentage forms. Line 11 is a transfer from the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund in 2010. That amount is attributed to underspending in calendar year 2009. Line 12 is a shift of HIV funding, so you'll see that that money is reduced in fiscal year 2011 but put back in 2013. Lines 13 and 14 are the governor's general fund operating budget reduction proposals for the Department of Human Services. Line 15 is not a governor's proposal. That is something that was in the bill previously to reduce county adult mental health grants $7.7 million. So the total resources are $116.364 million. The next section shows how the expenditures are framed in the bill. On line 19 is the money for the coordinated care organizations. That's $71 million. On line 20 is the amount for the prescription drug payments. That goes along with line 21, which is the amount that the coordinated care organizations will pay the state, so that the net for the prescription drug pool is $45 million in fiscal years 2010-11. The total spending from the general fund is $116 million. Beginning on line 25 are the effects in the healthcare access fund. The first one is the $28 million that is funded from the healthcare access fund to pay for the two-month bridge program. Line 26 is the money from the healthcare access fund for the temporary uncompensated care pool. And line 27 shows the effect of this bill on the change in the Minnesota care program. The next section, the interactions resulting from the changes, this shows you the effect on both the general fund and the healthcare access fund of not auto-enrolling the GAMC population into Minnesota care, and the transfers that are either not required or reinstated because of the changes in this bill.
Mr. Albrecht.
And so, members, there's just slightly, Madam Chair, slightly more savings on the top here by a little over $300,000, and then because of the no longer needing to transfer funds into the healthcare access fund and being able to make the statutory required transfer out of the healthcare access fund, we end up with general fund savings that I would expect to be applied to our target.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, I will begin with our testifiers, unless there's something further.
Do you want to go through the healthcare access fund balance?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members, the sheet that on the top says healthcare access fund balance after Senate File 460. I think in the middle of that page, you can see the change in the forecast GAMC population expenditures, $42.3 million and $187.9 million in fiscal years 10 and 11. And then the related spending that I talked about in fiscal year 2010 and 11 also, right below that line. So that the net result after this bill is over is the bottom line in the fiscal year 2011 column, $35.473 million. That's compared to before this bill, the fund balance would have been zero.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Albrecht. Is there anything further on this, Senator Berglund, that you would like to present?
No, we should take our testimony, and then I'll just have some closing comments before we take a vote.
Our first testifier is Brock Nelson, the CEO of Regents Hospital. He'll be followed by Lawrence Massa. As you get prepared, Mr. Nelson, for your presentation, I would like everyone to know who's presenting today, that we have another important item on our agenda, which is an update from the Department of Human Services, state-operated services. And so we're asking people to be succinct, to the point, and try to adjust whatever comments you prepared to about a two-minute schedule. So that's just a little heads up. Thank you. Mr. Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Brock Nelson, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer at Regents Hospital in St. Paul. On behalf of Regents Hospital and our 4,100 employees and medical staff, I'm here to support the proposed legislation. While this is not a perfect bill, we need to continue work on the issues that are facing us. First, I would like to thank the leadership for their work to help restore coverage for this important GMC population over the last 10 months. Specifically, I want to recognize Senator Linda Berglund, Representative Aaron Murphy, Representative Matt Dean, and Commissioner Cal Ludeman. Also, I want to thank the staff at the legislature and the Department of Human Services. I would also be remiss if I didn't recognize all the others, including safety net providers, advocacy groups, labor unions, faith-based organizations, hospitals, counties, and health plans that have all stepped up to address this issue. In my over 30-year career in this community, the elimination of GAMC has easily been the greatest healthcare challenge that Minnesota has faced. I would estimate that in your careers as well, it's one of the greatest challenges that you faced during your time as a legislator. I think the agreement represents a resolution to that challenge and is the beginning of some others, such as the looming budget deficit. As of this morning, we haven't had the opportunity to fully understand the impact of the bill on Regents. However, it is my hope that the agreement and the proposed legislation will accomplish three main objectives. First, to maintain the access to health care for the sickest of the sick and the poorest of the poor. Second, to direct resources to those hospitals that serve GAMC patients. And third, to provide a structure for those hospitals to work more efficiently to coordinate the care for this population. The first point is easy for most people to support and the most important part of the legislation. It's the last two points that will be a challenge. While our hospital, like other hospitals, would have liked the same level of funding that currently exists, this bill is a better solution than if the program was eliminated. Second, coupled with lower reimbursing, asking hospitals to change the way we provide care represents a new challenge. This is uncharted waters for all of us. The next 16 months will not be easy. but a new model of care is necessary, and we accept that challenge. Regions has had a long history of working with our community on initiatives to improve health, coordinate care, and reduce admissions. One example is our mental health drug assistance program. We need to increase those efforts. Over the last year and a half, we've been asking our partners to work, and they will be asking a lot of us to make this work continue. I am confident that we can all rise to this challenge to provide the best care, best experience for GAMC enrollees. As we begin the work of creating a new model of care, I urge you to continue to support this important efforts. Minnesotans are counting on us. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson, Regions is one of the hospitals under this bill that gets an extra 10% as compared to the other hospitals, correct?
Correct.
Would you still support the bill if that provision was removed?
It wouldn't be
Mr.
right.
Mr. Nelson.
I don't believe it'd be right or appropriate.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Senator
but my
Olson?
Question was whether you would still support the bill if that were the case.
Mr. Nelson.
Yes.
Okay. And then my
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My second question is the initial proposal that was brought to the legislature at the beginning of session, would you consider that to have been a much better proposal in terms of trying to save GAMC?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Next will be Lawrence Massa. And would Ronald Brand approach the, if you're here to testify, if you're here, please, so that we can get some efficiencies in our testifying. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lawrence Massa, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing our state's 147 hospitals and 17 health systems. Once again, I also want to take the opportunity to thank all of you for your ongoing dedication to serving the healthcare needs of this vulnerable population and for your continued work to find a GAMC legislative fix. Needless to say, this task has not been easy. MHA strongly supported the first two bills, which we continue to believe were viable and preferable solutions for serving this population and for preserving Minnesota's healthcare infrastructure. However, we recognize that the bill before you today may be the only approach that Governor Pawlenty is willing to sign into law. As you can imagine, it is difficult to testify on a proposal as complicated as this without having sufficient time to review the legislative language in detail and try to evaluate all of the financial as well as the care delivery implications for our members. For the record, we continue to believe the initial proposal was the best for the GAMC population, the provider community, and for our state budget. Now let me address the new proposal. It is important to remember that the MHA board's first goal was to maintain coverage for this population. And from our perspective, the secondary goal was to mitigate the financial loss to hospitals that provide that care. This bill addresses both of these concerns to some extent. It provides some money for hospitals to care for GAMC patients. It patches together funding in a manner that hopefully won't require tens of thousands of working adults on Minnesota Care to lose their health care coverage. And it recognizes that hospitals and health systems will move to a more population-driven healthcare delivery system in the future. However, we believe it will significantly increase hospitals' uncompensated care and will lead to higher healthcare premiums in the private sector. We'd like to provide some specific comments and also some questions. In total, hospitals will receive approximately $91 million in payments for the total cost of care for this population, compared to $219 million they would have received under the former GAMC program for just the hospital-provided care. That represents about 41% of our previous payment levels, accompanied by enormous risk for the total cost of care and the responsibilities associated with that new challenge. Contracting with the Department of Human Services to be a care coordinating organization will be a difficult undertaking for our members. The services required are predetermined. The hospital has no control over the number of enrollees assigned to it, and hospitals are not assured of the amount of money the CCO will be paid. If hospitals are allowed to become care coordinating organizations in phases, with some initially joining in June and others on a quarterly basis, does the amount of money drop as other organizations join? How can a hospital plan care delivery, not knowing what resources will be available to them for their various provider contracts, if the money they are to receive continues to change as more organizations come on as care coordinating organizations. Likewise, for other hospitals who choose not to become care coordinating organizations, the amount of money they will receive out of the uncompensated pool will vary greatly based on how many other hospitals choose this option. And that money runs out on November 30th. In addition to all the risks and unknowns discussed above, CCOs have to pay the state their proportional share of 20% of the state's prescription drug pool. If the pool is about $56 million, then the CCOs would have to collectively pay about $11 million. This seems to be an unfair provision and could dissuade hospitals from opting to become care coordinating organizations. They start out with $71 million and have to pay $11 million back because of the drug copay situation. The negotiated deal asks an awful lot of hospitals that are already struggling to meet the demands of more and more public program patients. It asks hospitals to take on more financial risk for less money, and it puts most of the financial and organizational responsibility on hospitals without sharing the burden more fairly with other stakeholders. That being said, I want to assure you that Minnesota's hospitals have been and will continue to be committing to meet the needs of our patients and communities with whatever resources we have. In closing, we ask that you would look at what comes next, the state budget. If this bill passes, please don't treat it like ancient history when looking at the governor's proposed budget cuts. The proposed cuts, which include Medicaid rate cuts, medical education cuts, Minnesota care enrollment cuts, disproportionate share hospital cuts, and rural hospital DRG add-on cuts, would be devastating to our healthcare system. When putting together your budget, please recognize that hospitals are already being asked to do more than our fair share to preserve Minnesota's safety net. We still have a lot of questions about this particular amendment and how will it affect our members, but we thank you for the opportunity to share our initial thoughts and reactions with you, and once again, we thank you for your continued attention to this important issue. Thank you. I'd be happy to try to answer your questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Massa, thank you for sharing your testimony today, and thank you again for, I think the Hospital Association in particular was a really good partner with this, with the members that were working on this provision. And I appreciate most your acknowledgement that the earlier proposal was, in fact, the stronger, better proposal. And I think sometimes there's a notion that the grass is greener or there's something better down the road, or let's just keep trying, or let's go back and try this over again. And it has proved out in this case once again that there wasn't a better deal down the road. And finally, Mr. Massa, I have a request of you, and that is I think that you and your organization could do a great service to all of your members and, frankly, to members of the legislature. This is a really difficult proposal for this division to even discuss. I can only imagine how challenging it must be for you to communicate this to your member organizations. And so I'm asking you to help us and let us help you so that we can best communicate to your member organizations how this transpired and why it is that we are bringing forth this proposal that we're bringing forth today. And it is clearly not because we think that this is the best public policy.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Massa, I guess it's kind of a comment question combined, because I've heard from, well, I greatly appreciate our chair's efforts to try to include the hospitals that have a large percentage of this population. And, you know, I know how difficult the parameters have been that she's had to work under and how hard that's been. I sort of feel like we've got a bully putting a gun to our heads and we're caving in. And we had a much better proposal before. It brought more money to the hospitals. I'm hearing from my hospital that they're not in a position to suddenly become acting like a health plan, you know, that there was going to be a lot of expense in doing that, and they can't begin to imagine how they're going to do that, and the cost. But, I mean, there's been no time for discussion to even talk about who the winners and losers are going to be. Some hospitals are certainly much better positioned to do that than others. And to assume that kind of administrative, I mean, when health plans do this, they get money for it. They get a lot of additional money to do this. We're asking our hospitals to do this and take a cut at the same time. So I don't feel like we're at the end of the road in terms of the legislative session. I understand what would happen with Minnesota Care, and I know that's not a but I just don't think it's fair to put a gun to our heads and say this is the only choice you have because one person says so. We have an entire legislature made up of members.
Is there a question?
So anyway, I guess I'm
thank you.
I'm just wondering if you're hearing similar kinds of comments from hospitals with concerns about whether they can actually take advantage of the CCO opportunity or not.
Madam
Chair, Mr. Massa.
Senator Olson, we are hearing a lot of comments from our members, and our members obviously don't know a lot about the details at this point because we just got a look at the actual bill last night. But I think there's a great deal of concern, particularly for those outside of the metropolitan area, as to how they would respond to a program like this. And our board, quite frankly, met on Friday morning. We didn't have even the details of what was announced later Friday afternoon, and we have mixed feelings on this proposal, as you've already heard this morning. So we've taken no position to support the bill nor oppose it.
Thank you, Mr. Massa. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, nobody caved in. We sent a bill to the governor that had bipartisan support. That was a bill that the Minnesota Hospital Association worked hand in hand with us to come up with a package that was as fair and equitable as we could be. The fact of the matter is the executive vetoed the bill.
Just a moment. I just want to make sure that we have time here for our testifiers to come through and we have clarifying questions. I know this is tough, and I'm asking our committee to try to wait to the end for debate, and we acknowledge that we're under pressure to accept something we may not fully grasp its implications, but we really need to provide time for testimony, and I'm asking the testifiers to discipline themselves as well. I know you have prepared comments, but can you please focus on things that are new messages to, that are not already, you can say that you agree, and then if you have something to add, please add those messages. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Massa. And the next presenter is Ronald Brand. And then while he's getting ready, would Jim Hattican please come forward and be prepared to present?
Good morning. My name is Ron Brand. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs, which is a statewide organization that provides generally non-hospital outpatient and community-based services in around 125 different locations around the state. We provide a substantial majority of the publicly funded mental health services as a group. It's important for you to understand that, that our association members provide a combination of services that are funded from a number of sources. Collectively, there are about 16,500 people who receive non-hospital-based mental health services in the state. And the spending on that was about $15.5 million. So we're talking about much less money than we were in the previous testifier, but it has a huge impact because of the way in which the services that our organizations provide are funded. I want to give you a few examples, and I want to acknowledge really how difficult this budget is for you in this committee and for all of us. It's really a sorry litany of sad news for community mental health and for all of us. For example, we recognize that many of the people receive both a combination of mental health problems and medical surgical. But when I say that about $15.5 million is spent on non-hospital, that's about 12% of the total. So most of the spending in this area has been on hospital medical surgical. So we know that people have mental illness and they have a combination of other problems, but the spending and the things that bring them to the hospital is often their medical surgical problems. I want to give you some examples of how this affects some of the members of our association because it's been something that we haven't been able to present before. It varies, but we're talking in Minneapolis, Spectrum Community Mental Health tells me that the GAMC loss would be about about $650,000. Range Mental Health up in northern Minnesota is about $200,000. Human Development Center in the Duluth area is about $240 million. People Incorporated here in the Twin Cities provides residential services and crisis residential crisis services. About 30% of the crisis residential services that they provide are people with JAMC, and that would be a huge loss. In Guild Incorporated, which serves largely in the Dakota area and partners with regions on a very innovative program, would lose about $322,000, which would be a combination of psychiatry, ERTS, crisis services, and intensive case management services. In other places, you have the impact of this sort of focuses on those intensive services and psychiatry because people need those services. The difficulty here is that when we look at the combination of the cuts to GMC plus the budget cuts in the governor's budget, we have some of the tools that we need to be able to avoid unnecessary hospitalizations or to help transition people from the hospital are weakened. We have a cut to county aid, which is large. We have cuts to adult mental health grants. There's cuts to the chemical dependency treatment fund. There are cuts of about the day treatment services that are authorized are cut by a third, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very difficult. Our members are working hard on things like transition to MA and things like that. The ECP concept in the bill, I think, is something that's promising. The exact definition of ECPs and some of the community mental health providers don't line up exactly right, but the concept is a good one. However, administratively, these are complex. These are separate organizations that need to learn how they can work together. We're concerned that with the hospitals in deficit, you know, the payments there will be in such a deficit that, you know, their cup runneth over. You know, how will any money coming out, will they have money to contract with federally qualified health centers, with community mental health centers or others in order to try to make the continuum of care work? There's a provision in the bill that you may not refuse services if you are participating in the coordinating care program. A concern with that is that on one hand, we may have a program that's working closely with the hospital on a case management and a transition from the hospital or diversion program. However, as a provider of outpatient psychiatry services, that's a different program, and we may be very vulnerable, and the other health centers may be very vulnerable for people coming there without a source to pay for that. So that on one hand, we're participating with this program, but this other program may not have a funding source. So in general, one of the problems is that there's specific services that are more affected by the changes to the GMC, and that taken together, there may be some of those may no longer be viable. There are organizations that may no longer be viable, and some of the providers, I'm sure, will have to make business decisions about who they can serve and whether or not a program is going to be able to continue in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Hedigan. Are there any questions? Senator Prettner-Solon, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brand, do you think that there's the potential for providers to dump patients because they aren't a part of the coordinating care organization, and then all of those patients end up in the CCO system,
sure,
and they're not with the physician
that they've been with.
They've been with.
Well, within our membership, we're a safety net provider. We're obligated to provide service on a sliding fee without regard to ability to pay, and that's part of our tradition. So decisions like that would come very, would be more likely to happen because of a lack of capacity where there just isn't appointments available. But would they be dumped? Are there potential for the relationships between the hospital or the coordinating care units yes, it's possible that kind of thing would happen. I'm not sure if it would be a conscious case-by-case decision, but it would reflect their sort of the capacity and the resources available. I think that there's potential problems in both ways because we may have psychiatry appointments available and that may be attractive to refer to the community providers for those or for other medical surgical programs with the federally qualified health centers.
Thank you, Mr. Hedigan. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, and perhaps to Senator Berglund, Senator Prettner-Solon, your question is a really good question. I feel like that question has been addressed, was addressed within the confines of the bill with regard to hospitals refusing service to patients, and I'm looking at page 10.
Senator Berglund.
Well, Madam Chair, we did our best. It isn't that we didn't think about this issue. You know, we said if you take money from the uncompensated care pool or you take money as a CCO, you cannot refuse a GMC patient. So you can't say, well, you know, we'll take patients up till the 15th of the month and after that everybody has to go somewhere else. You can't do that. We know that these folks aren't going away and they're very sick. And we know they're not going to have a means to pay for their own care. So I think hospitals or other organizations that traditionally have served the GMC population that think about a strategy of not participating and turning people away are going to be leaving themselves very vulnerable to uncompensated care that will not be paid for. And, you know, we do have in the bill, in the eventuality that that might happen to some area, in some area of the state, kind of a rebasing of the $71 million so that, you know, if someone's getting a lot more patients, and this isn't just, I mean, this can happen in any community. There are hospitals in the metropolitan area that are not in the 17 as well. But if there is an upturn in patients, then there can be a reallocation of the $71 million as we look at it each quarter.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, though, that while every facility has a history of compassionate care, that after 6 months, there is no charity care or uncompensated care fund anymore. And so it will be easy to fill slots with paying patients. And I'm afraid those GAMC patients won't have a slot in some of those systems.
Well, Senator Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, we do anticipate more hospitals will come into being a coordinating care organization after they have time to do the planning for it. And that is the system we would anticipate operating into the future. And I'd be the last one here to say that even though the governor says this has to be permanent, that the amount of money we provide in the future is going to be adequate.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Thank you, Mr. Hattigan. Scott Leitz.
You skipped.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Brandt. Sorry. Mr. Hattigan is coming up and followed by Scott Leitz. Thank you. Mr. Hattigan.
Thank you. My name is James Hattigan. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. As many of you know, Gillette was established by the state of Minnesota as a state hospital about 100 years ago to treat the children of Minnesota who had disabling conditions. We became a private nonprofit 20 years ago, but we're still committed to that original mission, still see the state as a partner with us in that mission. Like all of you, I wish the budget issues facing the state did not leave us with some of these hard choices. And I want to commend you for your hard work in putting together a bill that's going to continue to provide essential medical services for those among us who need those services the most. At the pediatric hospital, Gillette has very few GAMC patients since it's primarily an adult population. However, we believe this bill is very important to pass. It's too important not to pass, and we support its passage. Now, having said that, I would be remiss in my duties as Chief Financial Officer if I did not share with you some of the financial impacts this bill has on Gillette and aggravates some existing financial issues that we have. And I believe there's some handouts coming around. 50% of Gillette patients are covered by Medicaid, and that is approximately five times the statewide average for Medicaid in a hospital. Over the past 7 years, that reimbursement for Medicaid has been falling significantly and dramatically, and that impact is felt by everyone who sees those patients, but five times more by us because of the large number of patients we have. The part of the funding mechanism in this bill is what's been referred to commonly as the quarterly dish payments, which Gillette did receive. That for us is about $1.8 million per year, which will now be used for funding this bill. And this loss of this income is difficult for us, particularly if you look at the second page of the handout, what has been happening to us because of the Medicaid reimbursement falling every year. Our losses have doubled approximately every 2 years. We've gone from having cost paid to only, with this bill, 54% of cost paid. And I promise to keep my comments short. So in conclusion, we do support this bill. We ask only that as you move forward in your deliberations on this bill and other budget issues in the weeks ahead, that you keep Gillette in mind.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Leitz, followed by Mike Mahoney, who, if you'd come forward, be prepared. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Leitz. I'm Public Policy Director at Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota. I first want to thank the committee for the important hard work in coming up with a compromise solution on the GAMC dilemma. We recognize these were not easy discussions, and we want to thank you for your work on this issue. As the key Minnesota safety net hospital serving our state's sickest children, we believe it is critically important that we keep our safety net hospital system as strong as possible. When one safety net hospital suffers, the system is weakened and we all suffer. Although there is never a perfect solution, this compromise is not perfect. This legislation keeps that minimal safety net in place for society's most vulnerable citizens. Although children will receive no direct benefit from the legislation, we will be responsible for helping to pay for this solution. The elimination of the supplemental dish disproportionate share payments after April 1st of 2010 included in the bill will cost Children's approximately $6.4 million in anticipated funding. These reductions in supplemental dish are significant and they are cumulative. Taken together with reductions we've already received in previous sessions, these cuts represent lost opportunities for us to invest in the health of our children in Minnesota. Madam Chair, I'll be very brief. I simply want to point out a couple of things. As you know, Children serves kids from every county in the state. We're truly a statewide institution. We also serve a highly diverse population. We translate in over 40 languages and had 50,000 interpreter encounters last year. Our population is highly complex and very sick. Half of our beds are critical care beds. And we proudly serve more children covered under MA than any provider in the state. It's also our single largest revenue source. In January of this year, 43% of our revenue is from the medical assistance program. As was just previously mentioned, it's about 10% for adult facilities. So cuts to MA hit us about four times as hard as they hit other facilities. We know you have difficult decisions to make in the coming days. The state budget situation is challenging, and we recognize that you have a hard task in front of you. As you go about your deliberations moving forward, we ask that you remember that because of the role we play in serving Minnesota's low-income children, most of whom are on medical assistance, budget decisions related to MA will disproportionately impact children to a greater degree than nearly any other hospital in the state. The compromise solution on GAMC disproportionately impacts us, and this bill represents a substantial reduction in payment for us. And we ask that you remember that as you move forward in your deliberations. In closing, Madam Chair, let me just say that the state made a decision long ago that investments in education were important because every child deserved the same opportunity to learn. Likewise, we firmly believe that every child in Minnesota should have a healthy start in life. And the unfortunate truth is this. Further cuts will impact our ability to continue to invest in the health of Minnesota's kids.
Senator
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Madam Chair, and to you, Mr. Leitz, and others in the room who might be testifying or have testified, I just want to remind you, the dish money went away when the governor vetoed GAMC. GAMC is a match for the dish money, and when GMC got vetoed, DISH was gone. In our previous proposals, we've been trying to restore DISH along with, or some part of DISH, along with GMC. I think today we're here just admitting that we've not been successful in that effort. But we've been trying to restore it. And we're at a point with this now where we just can't restore it.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. I think the question that it might be good for everybody who comes to answer is whether or not you're supporting our passing this language as it is in the context of the problems that you're describing to us.
Madam Chair, we are supportive of a passage. We understand that this is a challenging problem and that a lot of very hard work and difficult decisions were made going into this, and we do support the passage.
Senator Prettner Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lights, Gillette does not have any GAMC population, though, does it?
Madam Chair, Senator Solon, I can't speak for Gillette Children's Hospital. I'm Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota.
Sorry,
I believe in both cases, however, we have no, neither institution has a GAMC population that we serve.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mahoney, and as he comes up, would Patrick Ness also join him at the table? Be prepared, and I would just remind you that we want to try to get through some of this so that if the first testifiers take more than their fair share of time, it makes it very difficult on those who follow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Michael Mahoney here on behalf of St. Mary's Duluth Clinic, and with me is Kathy Von Ruden, also here from St. Mary's Duluth Clinic. I'd like to first just let everyone know that we are here specifically on behalf of our mission, and that is at the Duluth Clinic. The mission is we are here to serve patients. So please don't take any of my comments contrary to that mission. However, we're also uniquely treated in this particular vehicle in that we're the only CCO eligible organization in a competitive market in a rural area with a very significant GAMC population, meaning St. Louis County has the third highest GAMC enrollment right now, and we're in a competitive market with two major providers, St. Luke's and St. Mary's Duluth Clinic. We did support the first solution to GAMC, and we did support the second solution to GAMC, and we're having a very difficult time with this particular solution to GAMC. To comment on some of the questions that were brought up earlier, Kathy can comment on the operational component, and then I'd like to draw out some of the perspectives that we have in the struggle and challenge that we face in determining whether there are any benefits in pursuing CCO status or otherwise going down a different track.
Thank you very much. As Mike said, I'm Kathy Von Ruden, and I oversee the areas of reimbursement, health plan contracting, and billing for SMDC. I reviewed the bill, and my two main concerns have to do with the options available under the bill as it relates to care delivery and reimbursement, both of which would be significant financial risk and potentially devastating for us. The first option would be we would agree to become, we would agree to contract with the commissioner and become a coordinated care delivery system. As a coordinated care delivery system, we would take on an unrealistic amount of financial risk. The GAMC recipients would be enrolled with us or they'd be assigned to us. We serve a very large geographic area, and we would have a significant number of enrollees outside of our Duluth Health Systems hub, for instance, on the range. With the fixed dollars that would be allocated to us, we would have to cover with those dollars not only SMDC's costs, our two main hospitals, and our 14 Minnesota clinics. We would also have to contract and pay providers outside of our system, for instance, many range providers. We would also have to contract with and pay for dental providers because we have to provide dental care. We'd be responsible for coordinating some social services such as housing. And for those non-contracted providers, we would have to pay for all emergency care. That really concerns us in the Duluth area because with St. Luke's emergency room, we know a significant number of patients will end up in the St. Luke's ER, and we will have to pay all of those claims, and we know they're going to be expensive. Our second option would be to choose not to become a coordinated care delivery system. And then we would submit our claims to the temporary uncompensated care pool. We wouldn't be paid for 6 months. The state would wait for 6 months. They determined the money in the pool versus all the claims that the non-coordinated care delivery systems would submit, and then it'd be split up proportionally. And nobody knows, of course, what the ultimate payment will be to each provider.
So if I could comment on the challenge that we face and whether become a CCO. Actually, in our system, we have two large hospitals, St. Mary's Medical Center and then St. Mary SMDC Medical Center, which is the former county hospital in St. Louis County, Miller-Dwan Medical Center. Miller Dwan Medical Center was not included or eligible as a CCO, and so the reimbursement through the CCO is only based on St. Mary's Medical Center. That would make available to us $2 million, taking on all the risks and otherwise commented by Kathy von Ruden. In the event that we don't seek CCO eligibility or status, we would not receive the $2 million. That would stay in the CCO pot and basically be available to other CCO eligible or deemed status or CCO providers who would then actually benefit from that. And there would be a significant shift in those dollars back to the metro community, primarily based on those providers who do have the assets, resources, et cetera, to assume this risk. The other thing is that there are CCOs, several CCOs, that would be eligible in every other community in the metro area. We're the only one in a rural area in a competitive market that is only eligible for CCO status, and we would also be assuming all that risk. We are not included in that 110% provision that allows enhanced reimbursement for HCMC, Health Partners, and Fairview University. And we're not included in the provision as identified as a non-state hospital designation hospital, even though Miller Dwan Hospital was a former St. Louis County hospital. So you can see that we're in a unique situation here. In its current form, we oppose the bill. We would love to see a fix to GAMC, but this particular one puts us in an extremely difficult position.
Thank you, Mr. Mahoney. Are there any questions? Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, we do have a provision in the bill that after the uncompensated care pool is over, if those other hospitals want to join with existing CCO organizations, then there would be a recalculation of the population in order for the pool for the coordinated care organizations to draw from. And it was with that in mind that there are situations where there will be hospitals in every area of the state that are not going to be a coordinated care organization, and rather than form their own, they might want to join with an existing one.
Senator Berglund, I don't know if this relates, but as those numbers change after the six-month period of time, is there a reason to have a recalculation as to who's included in that 110%?
Madam Chair, we took the top three hospitals based on volume of business against their total book of business, and that's where we drew the line.
My question, Senator Berglund,
even having others join, no one will reach
come
that
close
level.
To that. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just not sure I understand the concept of joining another organization. If your hospital is 4 hours away from the organization, I mean, why is there an assumption that they're going to be able to coordinate care across those kinds of geographic distances and that it's somehow going to, I mean, how would that even work?
Senator Berglund, would you like to address that?
Madam Chair, it was anticipated that there are within the state service areas today that have more than one hospital in that service area. It's just like we talked about earlier. We have a hospital system. Not every hospital does everything for everybody. So those hospitals work together today in terms of referrals. If a hospital has mental health beds and another one doesn't, they send people in need of mental health to the hospital that has the mental health beds. It would just be building on those relationships in terms of having people come together to serve the population in their community.
Senator Olson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just would have to respectfully say I can't think of in my area or even in the whole northern third of the state any hospital that would be in a better position. That's what's been described here in terms of trying to provide those services. Our regional center hospitals are all a couple of hours away from each other, and so as a practical matter, expecting that this poorest population is going to be able to drive 2 or 3 hours to get some kind of care coordinated service just doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mahoney?
Just one follow-up comment. Looking at the facilities who do or are eligible for CCO status, they're looking at the entire hospital. And actually, we consider ourselves one hospital. It's just that we're housed in two locations. And so St. Mary's Medical, SMDC Medical Center, the former county hospital, that we assume all the risk and liability for that same patient status, is not recognized in that. And so what would otherwise, we would hope, the benefit would be available through that CCO status doesn't accrue to the system.
Thank you. Let's move forward. Patrick Ness and then Maureen O'Connell.
Madam Chair, if I can just announce, for those who are here for the state-operated services presentation, it appears to me we won't get to it today, and so we'll be rescheduling it for Tuesday. So if those people want to leave, they could do so.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. I was just going to send you a note about that, that it appears that people need to have some time to talk about this. So we will ask that report to be made at the next hearing. Please proceed. Thank you very much, Mr. Ness.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patrick Ness. I'm the Public Policy Manager at Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. And here as part of the Save GMC Coalition along with Maureen O'Connell. Our coalition brings together a very broad base of GMC enrollees, consumer and low-income advocates, labor and faith groups, providers, social service organizations, and others deeply concerned about the health care of those on GMC. Our number one goal since May has been to protect the eligibility and benefits of enrollees of GMC and ensure that they have access to comprehensive and affordable health care. Over these last 9 months, we've engaged over 10,000 Minnesotans on this issue. We've been in the communities across the state. We have brought the people on the program who would be most affected into the Capitol halls to tell their stories. Religious leaders and communities of faith have led in this effort, and we can safely say that this is an issue that Minnesotans want to see a real solution for. It puts us in a difficult situation to come to the table today and raise some concerns that we have with this bill. Want to first thank, as a low-income advocate, thank Senator Berglund, not just for all of the efforts on this issue, which have been immense and incredible, but for the years and years of service in defense of low-income Minnesotans. We were very optimistic coming out of Friday's press conference and agreement. We celebrated when we heard that the agreement would preserve coverage for the lowest income Minnesotans. We absolutely believe in reform and that GMC needs elements of reform, and we do support moving to alternative care models for the GMC program. We would like to encourage that moving forward, if this is the bill that is implemented, that it's not called reform. These are very, very deep cuts, and we look forward to working with this body in the coming weeks, months, and years to bring true reform. It kind of felt like with the spring weather coming, there was a thaw. There was a thaw last Friday. And now we're discovering all the potholes. And there's still a road, and we appreciate that role and that road, and we want to continue down it. But there are a lot of very, very deep potholes in this proposal that's going to be tough on people at GMC. So I'd like to pass it to Maureen O'Connell to get into some of the specifics.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maureen O'Connell, and I'm the Advocacy Director at the Legal Services Advocacy Project. And I guess Patrick has turned it over to me to talk about the potholes from the enrollees' standpoint. First, we'd like to say that we agree with the eligibility framework. And as Patrick indicated, we've always been looking at it from an eligibility and services, access to services angle for the enrollees. And as Senator Berglund has said, it seemed that the choice came down to transitional Minnesota care or a GMC program, and we definitely support having the GMC program in existence for us to build on and to repair some of the potholes that I'm going to discuss as time goes on. From an enrollee standpoint, it's easy to say the good news is that there's eligibility. The bad news is that we can't tell you what you're eligible for. And one reason we can't tell you what you're eligible for is we don't know how the providers are going to react. So we don't know which providers are going to become CCOs. So that's one issue. It appears to us that if, as an enrollee, if you're not in an area served by a CCO, you will simply have access to hospital care, probably just inpatient care. So that is that will be a difficult thing to explain. The second thing that will be difficult to explain is what benefits you are eligible for. We took great comfort in earlier versions of the bill where the benefits were still in law. Now I'd like to direct your attention to page 23 and lines 33 through 36, where the description, so a CCO under the bill can either choose to provide the comprehensive benefits that described in subdivision 4, or they can choose to provide a set of comprehensive and medically necessary health services that the recipients might reasonably require to be maintained in good health, and that has been approved by the commissioner, and then including it. And we particularly are concerned about reasonably good health. When we have a condition, when we have all the recipients are not in good health. And so we have no, you know, from a lawyer's perspective, we have no idea what the meaning of this will be, and the discretion is left with the commissioner. So that is, a concern of ours is just we don't know what benefits that people will have in the end. So then again the issue of what an enrollee that does not live in a CCO area, what benefits they will actually get. So with that, I think we wanted to keep our testimony short today and to tell you our major concerns. But again, my organization has worked on this for 9 months. We want to, again, acknowledge the work of Senator Berglund. We want to acknowledge that the first bill was better. Unfortunately, it was vetoed. And we want to clearly say that we need a bill going forward. And this bill is better than nothing.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connell. Are there any questions? Senator Berglund.
I just have one comment, and that is that we know today with the current GMC program, there are a number of hospitals in Minnesota that send their GMC patients to other hospitals. I mean, I talked to Senator Kubley earlier in the year. He said he's got two that send them all to Hennepin, and he's got one that takes them. And so it is not just hospital care that people in non-CCO areas would have. They would also have prescription drug coverage. So when they get sent home from that hospital, wherever it is that they got taken to, and get back home, they'd be able to go to their local pharmacy and be able to get the prescriptions they need for their follow-up care. And that was, I just have to bring that up because that was hard fought for in the negotiations.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Ms. O'Connell, did you want to comment and then move on?
I'm very happy that Senator Berglund raised that point because that is another benefit that we are so thankful that that there is prescription drug coverage for this group in the bill, and we know it was a hard-fought battle.
Thank you. Dave Renner, president of the Medical Association, and Sue Abderholden. from NAMI. Would you please both come forward and be prepared? That'll be followed by Mary Edwards and Michael Scandrett.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dave Renner. Let me correct. First of all, I'm not the president of the Medical Association. I'm our director of state and federal legislation. But I appreciate the time to testify and give you a few comments from the Minnesota Medical Association. First of all, like many others before, I do want to commend the hard work that you all have put into this, especially Senator Berglund, in trying to address coverage and maintain coverage for folks who are covered through GAMC. Our goal, and I know many of your goal also, is continues. If we're serious about reforming our healthcare system and bending the cost curve, we think it is dependent upon having coverage for all Minnesotans. And continuation of a GAMC program, we think, is crucial. But as you also are aware, we have raised concerns in the past about the payment cuts that were in the earlier version. Those similar payment cuts are in this version. And just to clarify, Senator Berglund indicated a 37% ratable reduction. In reality, it's a 63% ratable reduction. It's a 30 because payments are based on 37% of what last year's or current payments are. So we're talking about a 63% cut to payments, at least on the physician side, that are already at about 37% of what the private market is paying. So we do have continued significant concerns that this will have impact on medical clinics and their ability to continue to participate in our safety net programs. But saying that, we also, I think like many others, say that we think passing this bill is better than doing nothing, and we think it is important that we continue to have the coverage for these folks. This bill does maintain coverage without putting in Minnesota Care, which would have created barriers through the premiums basis. And most importantly, it does protect the Health Care Access Fund. Our concern about the earlier version, the governor's proposal initially, was that the transferring this population would not only put this population and this program at risk, but also the Minnesota Care program at risk because of the shortfalls there. Let me also point out a few other concerns that we see. The biggest concern, I guess, is that this direction seems to be going opposite of what we were trying to do in health reform. The whole focus of health reform has been trying to get prevention, get people covered. Under this bill, coverage will either be through CCOs or in other cases it will only be and there is the outpatient or excuse me the prescription drug coverage, but otherwise it will all be through hospitals, at least for the first 6 months. We don't think that that is in line with what we were trying to do in reform in the past, and we think that that does not necessarily fit into the goals we have on universal coverage. The MMA continues to be strong supporters of health reform and designs to change our payment systems. We think it is important to better coordinate care and promote preventive services. But let me repeat, I think based on what Mr. Ness's comments earlier, I would caution you not to refer to this bill as reform. We think the concepts of accountable care organizations and care coordination have merit. But we hope that people don't judge whether those programs work based on this bill. What we look at this bill is basically significant cuts in payments, providing lump sum payments to hospitals, and then basically asking hospitals to swallow the cost and accept the risk. It's going to be very difficult, I think, for those entities to be able to do the innovation that we all want and help coordinate that care with the significant cuts here. You are well aware that this solution is far from perfect. Because again, you're asking providers to accept more and more of the costs. And at some point, we have to again say this cannot continue. Once you pass this bill, we are still having to deal with the $1 billion shortfall. And we are hoping that the legislator and the governor will not be coming back to the same providers and asking for additional cuts because we are very nervous that our safety net program is at risk of unraveling. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee
may have. Are there any questions for Mr. Renner? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Renner, I will make the same plea to you that I made to the Minnesota Hospital Association. And we're going to need your help. You've heard how difficult the discussion is here. And I would like to think that we're kind of on the inside of the discussion. And so please continue to work with your members so that they have the clearest understanding possible of how it is that we ended up here.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, we will try to continue to explain how we ended up here. I think we will also, though, have to keep coming back to you all and remind you that we cannot continue to make the promises that we make to have a healthcare safety net if we are unable and unwilling to fund it adequately. But I understand the political dilemma we are in this year. We are trying to keep our members engaged, but that's the realities we're facing.
Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you.
Then Mary Edwards will come up and be prepared, and Michael Skandret.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I, too, echo everyone's thanks for the committee. We know this has been a very difficult situation, and thanks to Senator Berglund. I know that you, have always been a strong advocate for people with mental illness. I just want to say that I think what's frustrating to the mental health community is that, thanks to the 2007 investments that you made of $34 million, we have, in fact, been developing our mental health system. We have new services in place. We have alternatives to hospitalization. We have ways to really, begin to transform our mental health system. And I do want to have you note that I used the word begin and not concluded in terms of transforming our mental health system. And so we're really, in some ways, kind of concerned about how the changes to GAMC, along with the governor's other cuts, will really affect our mental health system. I don't really believe that the CCOs will work with our adult rehab mental health services providers, our crisis homes, and our intensive residential treatment service providers. We might have in the past gone to counties maybe to make up those dollars, but, that doesn't look possible right now. I think if you view this in totality with the, $7.9 million being cut from adult mental health, the $17 million from state-operated services, the loss to those community providers from GAMC dollars and some of the other cuts, we get almost back up to the $34 million that we invested in 2007. So we feel, we're kind of at a loss. I know that you're between a rock and a hard place. I think I would just say that I wish the administration would be careful with using words like accountability, better outcomes, transformation, and reform, when in fact what we're doing is making devastating reductions in funding and just trying to make the best of a terrible situation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Abderholden? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Edwards.
Good morning. My name is Mary Edwards. I'm the Vice President of Public Policy for the Fairview Health System. Fairview has seven hospitals, including the University of Minnesota Medical Center Fairview. I'm speaking today on behalf of all Fairview hospitals and clinics when I say thank you, Senator Berglund, very much for creating a new GAMC proposal once again. From the beginning of the situation, Fairview has advocated for the restoration of GAMC for the good of the people served by the program. Given the circumstances and alternatives, we are supportive of this proposal. Because of the newness of the proposal and its rapid development, my feedback today is mainly based on general concepts. Having said that, we support this proposal for three reasons. Number one, as Senator Berglund, you said in your opening comments, it's good for the patients. Individuals covered by GAMC, including those that utilize our mental health and chemical dependency services at UMMC Fairview, are best served by a program that continues much in the same fashion as before. Number two, it provides access to primary care and prescription drugs. The best hope of reducing costs in this program is getting the individuals covered by GAMC better aligned with primary care services. And prescriptions are absolutely vital in improving and maintaining this population's health. Number three, it's interesting. This is an interesting program. Fairview has been working over the past 2 years to create new models of care. We aim to improve quality, improve patient experience, and reduce the total cost of care. The current proposal would provide incentives to very rapidly develop a care model for this population. The social and physical and emotional needs of GAMC enrollees require a very, very unique care model. The timing is going to be very challenging since the bill calls for coordinated care delivery organizations to start by June 1st. While we are supportive of this proposal, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention just a couple of our concerns. The proposal caps the state's financial responsibility for health needs of this population. Hospitals do not have that option. Anytime you squeeze nearly $400 million into a $164 million budget, something has to give. And in this situation, hospitals will be that we'll have to give. We'll have to give more on compensated care, and we will care, which will be paid even less for than before. In addition, as you've already articulated today, it appears that there'll be many new administrative requirements that will add time and expense. For example, the bill states that hospitals will have to submit invoices in order to get reimbursed from the uncompensated care pool. The hospitals in the coordinated care delivery will likely have to negotiate with providers' contracts that are not employed under the physician groups. So our concerns remain about the financial structure and the financial risks, as you've already heard throughout the throughout the testimony today. Yet we feel very supportive of this effort. Some version of GAMC proposal is better than no version, the looming alternative. As Winston Churchill once said, difficulties masters are opportunities won. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Are there questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have the same question for you that I had for Regions. If the section of the bill that says that Fairview gets an extra 10% is removed from the bill, do you still support it?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Scandrett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Scandrett. I'm here on behalf of the Safety Net Coalition. I know you've heard a lot of testimony, so I'll try to be brief. Thank you. Passing the bill is better than not. On reform, we are at, a tipping point on this, and it can go either way. This can be reform or it can be a further step towards the system falling apart. And a lot of that will depend on working through the issues that others have brought up between the balance between outpatient and hospital care. You can give the money to the hospitals or the counties or to the providers individually, and they're all going to have to work with the others anyway. And the Safety Net Coalition has some interesting work ahead of us, and you've heard from Regions HCMC and St. Mary's Duluth, three of our Safety Net hospital members, and having very different views on things. You heard from Ron Band, the mental health centers, others of our members, such as the community health centers, the coverage programs, all are affected in different ways by this. So our community feels like we need to figure out a way in which these different stakeholder groups can work together and to try to bring that forward in as a way to kind of help us understand how do we balance these issues, because the tipping point is a hospital may be tempted to just keep the money to subsidize their losses, and patients will continue to go to the safety net clinics, and the safety net clinics will probably continue to serve them and by so doing reduce the losses the hospitals experience. We hope that and will encourage the hospitals to see the value in working with those clinics, but how you do this is very complicated. We don't have very much time to figure it out, but fortunately this is not a new concept that Senator Berglund and others around this table have been working on this for quite a while, and the safety net providers have as well, and we maybe weren't quite ready to leap on it, but I think there's at least an opportunity for us to move forward on this. The final comment I just wanted to say, too, is that we can't separate this bill completely from the budget issues. And we know that there are other issues that you will be facing coming up, and we do have a little more time before those things come up. But we have to remember that the governor also proposed to eliminate the cash grants for general assistance, that there are also issues around the critical access and subsidy programs for safety net providers and other things. So I just encourage the committee as you move forward to remember that the other pieces of this that have to come together are important as well, and we understand the agreement and the need to move forward with this bill without substantial changes, but also look forward to the opportunity to working with all of you on the budget issues in order to kind of finish some of the parts of this that cannot be disconnected from this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scandrett. Are there any questions for Michael Scandrett? Seeing none, that will end our testimony. Thank you very much to the testifiers, and I will invite Senator Berglund, if you want to, at this time, make some remarks.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. So as many who have testified here today have said, it is better to have some ongoing funding and a program that helps protect patients that need a GMC program. Will this work? I believe, even though it's underfunded, that it will work, because just as those of you who sit at this table and will vote on this proposal today care about the patients that need this program, so do the providers who sit in this room and outside of the Capitol who provide care to the GMC population. And it will do no one any good to turn their hospital into a revolving door emergency room only service. Keeping people out of your emergency room and out of your unnecessary hospital beds when you're being paid a lump sum is the best way to make the best of a bad situation. And so I believe the providers in our communities will step forward. I know we've had commitments from many to begin the innovation today. I believe as we move forward, this proposal will leave us in a position in the future to have the healthcare access fund be balanced and protect that program for the people who rely on those services. It will leave us in a position to have a basis for a future GAMC program that can come back and fill potholes that may exist, can help to evaluate how this will work over the next 15 months, and provide solutions that may be needed to make it even better in the future. So I ask for your vote today on this proposal, and I ask you, each and every one of you in your hearts, to recognize this is the best we can do this year for our providers, for our constituents who need GMC, and to acknowledge it's not as good as we would like it to be, but it is the best we can do right now, and so I ask for your vote.
Thank you, Senator Bergen. We're going to take some questions now, and I'd like to ask the first question because there's been some questioning of the testifiers about whether or not they would support this bill without the 110% portion of the bill to specific hospitals, and I'd like to have you speak to that specifically, that concept of eliminating that particular portion of the bill.
Madam Chair, it is part of the agreement. And if we don't have the agreement intact, then we have to go back to the table.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. I think, and members, excuse me. Every area is affected differently by the delivery of the healthcare system. And I don't know that people understand the stress that's placed on Duluth, as they serve one-third of their population is Wisconsin, northern Michigan. We still pay provider taxes on that. We don't get any benefit of any DSH payments, any MRC payments, any type of federal match in Duluth. We just get the straight MA Medicare payments that come from those districts. It doesn't get counted in Minnesota when we identify our public population. And I'm just very, very concerned about what's going to happen to the largest healthcare provider in all of the northern third tier of Minnesota. If we continue to cut payments to hospitals and to providers, and we continue to place burdens of responsibility on them. And I'm just wondering, we have a hospital that was a public hospital for many, many decades, maybe 100 years, Miller Dwan Hospital. About eight years ago, I think, it was bought by SMDC. Very much like Regions is now owned by a healthcare plan. Why could they not also be an eligible non-state government hospital and qualify the same way? And I just wonder if we couldn't make an exception to include them as an eligible non-state government hospital. It's the St. Mary's Medical Center.
Senator Berglund, would you like to speak to that question?
The intergovernmental transfer portion of the bill has been limited to public hospitals, and I think when you create intergovernmental transfers to draw down federal Medicaid monies, you have to have a rationale. You can't just be arbitrary in how you create your structure.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bergen, it's not much different from regions. It's now owned by a health care plan. The Essentia Health System, SMDC, assumed Millard One Hospital along with its whole public population in the same way.
Senator Berglund.
Senator Pretner Solon, I understand that. And there was, for several years, questions as to whether regions would be classified as a public hospital by the federal government for these purposes, and they have been. I don't believe other hospitals other than the four I listed at the beginning of my presentation can meet that status legally in the eyes of the federal government.
They're sitting back there.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, yes. Senator Pretner Solon, I would just call your attention to the language on lines page 13, lines 15 through 17. If other hospitals do obtain that kind of approval, then they would be part of the pool that would get that money.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Yes.
Senator Berglund. In line 310, would it be possible to add St. Mary's Medical Center along with Fairview University Medical Center?
Senator Berglund.
I don't think that would hurt anything. I mean, if you think they might become an eligible hospital, listing them in the bill is not a problem.
Could we hear from Mr. Mahoney? I don't know if he can help us.
Thank you. Mr. Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pretner Solons. Senator Berglund, the former St. Louis County Hospital was Miller Dwan Medical Center that recently changed its corporate name but remains independent as SMDC Medical Center and continues to serve the same county population that it always has. So to the extent the committee decides to move in that direction, the actual name of the facility at this point in time is SMDC Medical Center.
Do you have a motion, Senator Pretner Solon?
Madam Chair, I would move that on line 1310, after the word center, we add SMDC Medical Center and SMDC Medical Center.
Are there any further questions or comments on the amendment?
Yes.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Mr. Mahoney.
Mr. Mahoney?
Do you have to get federal approval then? As Senator Berglund said, you'll have to get federal approval on this.
Federal, I'm sorry, I was talking to. Could you repeat the
question,
please?
To be designated as a non-state government hospital, Senator Berglund mentioned that the three that are listed have federal government approval. Is that going to be a problem for the hospital, for you to get this approval?
I can't comment on that right now, but we're happy to go through that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mahoney. Any further questions on the amendment? On the amendment, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. Is there any further discussion? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess as I've been listening to the comments, I'm particularly concerned, of course, you know, representing a rural district, about whether there's any benefit for the hospitals that serve that area. And some of what's been raised, and again, I go back to my comment, and I'll just have to respectfully disagree with Senator Lynch about this, because some of the threats we've heard have been things like we're going to automatically enroll the GAMC population in Minnesota Care if we don't do what the governor says. Well, we set the parameters as the legislature for who's eligible for Minnesota Care, and as I think Senator Berglund has pointed out, there's a high likelihood that that would be an illegal activity because it isn't in parameter, it isn't in compliance with the law with regard to the eligibility for Minnesota Care. I think that's what I've understood Senator Berglund to
Senator
say.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, yes, it's always been my position that auto-enrollment is not legal under the statute today. Mm-hmm. But you need to remember, most of the impact on Minnesota Care has been forecasted because of the end of the GAMC program. So auto-enrollment isn't the only thing that would be affecting it. It had a little extra pressure put on there, but there's $255 million impact on the healthcare access fund by having GAMC go away.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Olson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have just a lot of concerns here. I have not heard anyone from the governor's office defend why this is a better proposal for us to consider as compared to our earlier proposals. And I've heard everyone say who has testified that we had better proposals earlier in terms of the amount of money the hospitals would be receiving. I mean, I won't go through all the details. We've heard them many times. And I've also am concerned, we had this discussion a couple of years ago when we looked at the hospital's ability to do the type of what's being called reform with care coordination, that there were some strong concerns for rural hospitals when they had the funding to do it, about their ability to do it and be competitive with metro area hospitals. So if you look at the totality of the picture here, I just think it's bad policy to be putting in place a system that moves in the direction of enhancing the ability of rural hospitals to serve different funding levels for metro hospitals compared to rural hospitals. You have differences in the ability to actually meet the requirements under the bill. And so, when you look at all of those things together, as much as I understand you could say this is making the best of a bad proposal, I still look at that as saying, why are we looking at this bad proposal as opposed to working through a longer period of time when there's been no defense of why we should be considering this proposal as opposed to the earlier proposals we had. No one at the table here explaining that from the governor's office.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Senator Olson brings up a very good point. And I really think that there is a lot to digest here. We don't know the impact on our communities. We don't know who's going to really participate and not. We don't know how this is going to play out in our communities. I would like us actually to lay this on the table for further consideration and invite the governor here to explain why this is a better provision, a better bill than any bill that's been here before. I would like a chance to have a dialogue with the governor about this.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members, I would like to move this bill out of this division today. There is still urgency. We have no program after April 1st. Because there is no funding for a program after April 1st.
Senator Berglund, if we proceed as you would like us to today, does that mean that we could not ask for some discussion in this committee? Because this will be in Finance Committee. There's still another stop for it.
Right.
But
there would be, Madam Chair, I'm not trying to end the discussion. I'm just trying to stay on a timeline that meets the needs of having a program continue. So, if you want other people to come and testify or to talk about this with you, I'm happy to try to accommodate that.
Senator Olson, the question for me is whether or not we want to lay this on the table and delay for, delay the progression and allow ourselves to have the experience of listening to the governor or the governor's office explain why we should be voting for this. Or if you're saying that you don't feel you want to vote for this, you're unwilling to vote for the bill unless that happens first.
I guess that's what I would, what I'm saying, Madam Chair. It seems to me that there won't be another opportunity for the members of this committee to discuss this unless it's on the floor, which I don't think is the place to have that kind of discussion. Other finance committees do not have the background that we've had in going into in-depth review of, I think that's the responsibility of this committee.
But Senator Olson, I might not have made myself clear. I want to make sure that I understand your position. Whether or not the governor or the governor's office is able to persuade you that this is a better bill or a better option than earlier options, would that mean that you would not support this bill?
Madam Chair, I think if the governor can make the case, or the governor's office, someone from the governor's office can make the case to the to us and to the public that this is a responsible alternative and that it's preferential to our earlier alternatives, I think that that's a very important discussion for us to have publicly so the public understands the differences and the relative merits and the rationale for why we're being forced to have to have this kind of vote on this kind of choice. We haven't heard anyone say yet that this is a better alternative. There's been really no defense other than we haven't been given any choice. And the only person who's put us in the position of not giving us any choice is the governor. And so without that discussion publicly, how can there be even an awareness at the public level of what the differences really were and what the rationale is for passing the governor's bill?
Thank you, Senator. Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking about all the negotiations that Senator Berglund went through trying to cut this deal. And I think the same message is being said at the House level and at the governor's level. So I'm not really sure why you're adamant that the governor's office or the governor himself shows up here when the message is being relayed by Senator Berglund, who is in those hearings, in the negotiations, and she's relaying the message that this is the deal. And I think we should respect that.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, this is hard for me to say, but I think I need to say it really straight up to you. This is a better proposal than the original proposals because the governor will sign it.
Senator Prettner-Solden and Senator Olson. And then after that, if there is a motion, if there's something that somebody wants to move to see where the committee is at, Senator Lynch.
I will move.
Senator Berglund. Senator Prettner-Solden wanted to speak, and then Senator Olson before I can take your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Senator Rosen's comments about Senator Berglund being in the negotiations, but I actually would like to hear right from the horse's mouth why this is a better deal, and I would like an opportunity to ask the questions about why we should support this bill rather than an alternative.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that just underscores Senator Berglund's answer. Well, I have a great deal of respect for the difficult situation she was placed in and what she's trying to do to save the GAMC program. I think it underscores the comment that I made earlier about a gun to our head. And that's why I think that someone from the governor's office needs to be here and be publicly accountable for why this is somehow a better proposal when everyone on this who's talked about this says it's not, and when certainly the majority of the members of this committee obviously felt it is not, and that the only reason that we're doing this is because the governor is giving us no option. I think we have to say that very clearly. But how can we vote in the if there's no other option, then his office should be able to defend this as a better proposal and defend it publicly.
Is there a
Madam Chair?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I know there were representatives of the governor's office here earlier, and we have called to see if they would come back. But in the meantime, I just want to say there is another alternative to this bill, and that is having no program. And I think those are the choices before us today. I know we'd all like to have other choices, but those are the two choices.
Madam Chair.
Just a minute, Senator Coring, I would like to follow up. Senator Berglund, in terms, I was going to ask if there's somebody here today from the governor's office that's still in the room. When you're saying that you've called to try to see if somebody will come back, are you thinking that we should be able to have an answer to that fairly soon?
I don't know if they're coming back or not. I know they've
been a call. Okay.
Yes.
Senator Coring and then Senator Lynch.
Just a clarification to the chair. I thought I heard a motion to lay it on the table. Was that a motion, or did you just threaten that?
Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, I was asking. I was not a motion. I'd like to make that motion, but I was willing to leave it open for discussion before I made the motion because it's a non-debatable item.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just came from a similar experience with the bonding conference committee in terms of negotiation and working with the executive branch. And I'm going to base my comments on the experience that I had there in part. And I do think that everyone in this room and everyone in this division, if you think about it, we know what the governor thinks of this solution. The governor has indicated that he is favorable towards this solution. He's favorable towards it because it costs less money. The governor believes this is health care reform. He has indicated by his support of this package that this is what he thinks reform looks like, and this is the direction he thinks that we should be going. I'm going to go further and say, I think we've come light years. Because when we sent the original proposal to him that passed this legislature with bipartisan support, and I might note overwhelming bipartisan support, the governor vetoed the bill. That makes me think that there's reason to question whether or not he was even looking for a solution for this problem. And it's been, I think we've forgotten that Senator Berglund and others haven't been working on this for the last 30 days. They have been working, members have been working on this for months and months and months. And any of us sitting at this table, and I would say anybody serving in this legislature, was invited to the table to participate. I heard Senator Berglund repeatedly send out pleas. If you've got ideas, if you've got solutions, if you've got, you know, something that you want to put on the table, come on in. Months and months and months. I'm going to support this bill for two reasons. Because there's an awful lot of reasons not to support this bill. And I will tell you, I didn't know what I was going to do on this bill until probably the end of the testimony today. But I'm supporting the bill in part because it does the best job of maintaining the integrity of the Healthcare Access Fund. And in part because while I am certainly sympathetic to the situation that hospitals and clinics and providers have been put in, the bottom line is we are here today having these conversations for all of the people that that don't walk these halls, all of those JMC recipients, and it's because of that that I'm supporting the bill.
Senator Olson, and then we need to take an action.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just very quickly to follow up on Senator Lynch's comments, I would just say I have an overwhelming amount of respect for the work that the Hospital Association, Senator Berglund, and others did in putting together a proposal, a very creative and smart proposal to save the GAMC population. And that population and that proposal was presented and, as Senator Lynch said, passed with bipartisan support. Now, for some reason, because the governor's office isn't even engaged in being here at the table, forced us into this position, and now Senator Berglund is having to defend the governor's position, which is, everyone says, a much worse position. And from what I can tell for rural Minnesota, the options that my GAMC recipient constituents are going to have is to come to the metro area to try to get their care down here. So I can't support the bill as much as I respect the work that Senator Berglund has done.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I don't believe things will be that dire for your constituents under this bill, but if they are and you believe that, then I ask you to vote for this bill so the hospitals in the metropolitan area will be able to take your constituents. Because if this bill doesn't pass, they won't be able to.
One more comment, and then we need to have an action. We need to move out of the room by 11.
I'll make the motion.
Well, Senator Berglund?
I would move that Senate File 640 as amended be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee.
As amended.
As amended.
Further discussion? Senator Pretner Solon?
Madam Chair, I move to table the bill for further consideration and to hear from the governor.
That is not a debatable motion, so that's just a straight vote.
Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call vote.
This will require a roll call vote. Would you please call the roll?
No.
No.
Senator Erickson Ropes is not present. Senator Fischbach?
No.
Senator Corey?
No.
Senator Laurie?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Pretner Solon?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Sharon?
No. Does not pass. So we go to the original motion. Any further discussion? You want a roll call?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion passes.
Thank you very much, members.
Senator Sharon,
adjourned. Oh, the meeting is adjourned.